This is how legends are made.
Legendary.
There's so many legends in this building today.
Legendary.
Well, thank you so much for joining us on Legendary, the podcast. I'm Kevin Jonas Sr., and I am so excited about today because today we have people in the Jonas family or Jonas extended family. My sons would not be where they are. Our family would not be where we are if it weren't for dedicated people, people that came in early, believed in our family, believed in the music, believed in the guys, connected as a group, and became kind of part of this fabric that is the super fandom of Jonas. We're really appreciated. So today we have Lisa Heiser. We have Kat. How you doing, Kat? We have Stephanie. We have Carla, and we have Shelby. Guys, thank you so much for joining us.
Hello.
It's amazing to be here. It really is.
Truly. It really is.
Well, the purpose of this, as I was thinking through just some of the things we've lived through, it's impossible to separate our life journey from the impact of the fans. They are a part of everything we've done. And everything that my kids have done throughout their career, and now Frankie and his career, Franklin and his career. And so as we start this discussion, I can tell you that one of my first memories, the very first thing the boys ever did as a group, was in Wyckoff, New Jersey at a church. It was a gym at a local church. And we threw it out there so the boys could rehearse with their new band, which included Greg and John, and we threw it up, and I was standing in the back beside Phil McIntyre and Johnny Wright, co-managers, and Johnny turned around and he said, "What do you think?" And I was looking up at a group of people screaming, small little group of people screaming in the front of the stage, and I went, "If they ever get exposure, that is going to be a massive amount of people that are going to be screaming and loving them." And it didn't take long before people like you found them and started following and going to shows and spending money and flying all over the place. But there's a thing in fandom. There's a thing that happens where people connect to certain artists and it becomes just a part of their journey. And I know in this, some of you are like Jonas only. And thank you very much. And some of you are fandom only. And some of you actually have been a part of some of the most viral moments we've had, Lisa. And so you have special skills as it relates to what to ask, what to cover, being there in the moment and just having that special magic. And so all of you, I know your names. I know your names before I met you. I know your names from Twitter and MySpace and all the rest. So I'll start with a broad question, and I'd love to hear from each of you. How did you first hear about the guys, and how did that impact your life? So Lisa, why don't we start with you? And then I just want each of you to just kind of give me a quick look into how you started being a part of Jonas Brothers and Jonas fandom.
So it was like 2005. I had just decided, you know, I was kind of bored in college. So I decided to learn how to code. So I made my own website because there wasn't much on the web at that point in terms of focusing on young Hollywood and the up and comers. It was like Perez Hilton and the regular just Jared. And that was basically it. So I made my own website, and, you know, I covered the things that I liked, which was like Jesse McCartney and Ryan Cabrera, Ali and AJ, stuff like that. And then towards the end of 2005, people had found me and they were like, "You should really, you know, check out these brothers that are coming up. I feel like they'd be a good fit." I think at that time there wasn't much out obviously on them, but some, you know, videos, they were doing YouTube, stuff like that. And so I just started watching them, and, you know, I really liked what they were doing, and I felt like, you know, connected to what they were doing. And so I got in contact and started posting about them on MySpace and my website, and it just kind of blew up from there.
That's awesome. Yeah. I mean, obviously, Lisa has even worked with me in various stages of this journey we've been on. Very, very thankful for those early days with her. Kat, tell us how we got connected.
Fate brought me to, well, summer of 2005. I just graduated high school and Backstreet Boys were touring their Never Gone tour, which I'm a huge Backstreet Boys fan. And
no, you're kidding.
Yeah, that's where I learned most of my fangirl ways. So I just remember three kids that looked around my age getting on stage at Jones Beach. And I was intrigued. I was like, what is this? Because the opener was KC Brown. So it was, you know, before KC even came on, no
Way
one was there
before.
Pretty much. Right. It was like,
we were like, we were like right after lunch.
Right. The crew just got on, right. And they just started singing. They had so much energy and the energy was infectious. And I just remember being like, it's so refreshing to see people that are, because Backstreet Boys love them, different generation. I related to them, to the Jonas Brothers. They just had so much fun on stage. So it was Fate. And ever since then, that was when I was like, I think this is going to be something. I had a little inkling in my little fangirl heart. So great, thanks to Backstreet Boys.
Yeah. Well, I think within a show or two, you were like part of that. Yes. Immediate like meet and greets, fan club, selling merch,
right? All the above.
Yeah, came in with some others and were like, hey, you don't know what you're doing, we know what we're doing. Scoot over and let us show you what fans can do. And taught us a lot,
right? And I didn't like, I just remember seeing the reaction of the fans or just people meeting them. And it was similar to when I would meet Backstreet Boys or other fans would meet, you know, other bands. And I think that was a big like green flag. This is going to be something. So it was very exciting.
Well, you have good instincts. it worked because of you guys. Stephanie.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm good. Thank you. I did not discover them, unfortunately, until like the very beginning of 2007. And I mean, I was really, really young. I just happened to see them actually like on TV. I saw, it was, I think Year 3000 or something that was playing. And for some reason, I mean, I had been kind of struggling with some family stuff, some personal issues that I was not really dealing with very well. And I kind of felt like, I don't know, I was kind of losing my light a little bit. And I don't know what it was. I think it was just kind of like how Kat said, like fate. And something kind of just made me want to look into it more. So I looked them up and I saw this interview with them and heard like just the way that they were speaking. And I think a lot of it has to do with like your influence and the things that you taught them and the way that you like raised them to just be the type of people that they are. And I was really taken aback by that. And they were so different from like everyone else. I don't know, it just impacted me really deeply. And the more that I learned, the more inspired I was. They're the reason that I learned how to play guitar. They're the reason I started like writing songs. They literally changed the entire trajectory of my life. So the impact was huge and has kind of snowballed like over the years. I think everybody in my life thought that it was going to be like some sort of, you know, passing phase. And here we are a lot of years later and nothing has changed at all. I feel like everything has just continued to grow and they've literally been a part of every single stage of my life since. And I don't think that will ever change. I don't think it ever could change.
That's awesome. Awesome. Carla, how are you?
Hello. I'm good. How are you?
So good. Well, tell us how you got in on this journey.
Well, like Steph and Kat said, I was actually talking about this last night with my friend Marissa about how I also feel like it was almost built into my design of what my plan of life was supposed to be, because this all happened accidentally. Like, nobody, this was back in the day. Okay, I was young, don't get me in trouble, but I was downloading something off of LimeWire. I don't know what it was, what I was trying to download. And I accidentally downloaded One Day at a Time. And honestly, I don't even think It's About Time, like, the album had come out yet. Like, it was like 2 weeks later. So I don't know what it was doing on LimeWire, but it was there and I downloaded it.
They had that record like a month before. I think they somehow stripped it off of the Sony website and back room digitally, because they had it.
Yeah, because LimeWire had like everything that wasn't supposed to be there. And so that's how, you know, to download music onto my iPod or whatever. And I honestly don't remember what song I was actually looking for, but I downloaded that one and I heard it. And at the time, like, I was like a heartbroken little 12-year-old that thought like, oh, I know what heartbreak is. I'm so in love, da, da, da. And so the lyrics like resonated with me a lot. And like, I love, love, love music. And one of the things that I pay a lot of attention to is lyrics. So literally full tears, the whole thing. And then I was like, okay, who are these guys? Like, what is a Jonas Brother? So then I looked them up and I found their YouTube channel, and they had all these videos of them just like playing around and being themselves. And it's like how Steph said, it just felt very like different. And even though it was through a screen, it felt very genuine. And I just like knew somehow in my heart that they were really, really good people. And then from there, it was like, okay, let me do a deep dive. And there was literally no turning back. And it's like how Steph said, it's, they've literally like almost, if it wasn't for that, for them, like shaped me into the person that I am today. Because, oh, all of a sudden I want to make a MySpace fan page too. I need to learn how to code. I need to learn how to make profiles. I need to learn how to Photoshop. I need to learn how to make videos. And then through doing that, I learned that I actually like doing that, like in general. So those became my passions and my hobbies. And like, even sitting and standing in this room right now would not be possible without them. And so it's just been a crazy past 17 years, I think. Like, at this point, when I pass away, I would have been a Jonas Brothers fan for longer of my life. Like, if I die at, like, if I die at 70, out of those 70 years, 12 of them, I wasn't a fan. Which is crazy, because I know I'm not going anywhere. It's the same thing that Steph said, that it was like, oh, this is going to be a phase. And I'm like, I don't know how to explain it to you, what I'm feeling for these guys right now, but it's not a phase and it's never going to go away. And here we are. So clearly I was right and everyone else was wrong.
I love it. That's great. Shelby.
Hi, guys. My journey started really early on too. They weren't doing anything in California or anything near, but I had seen some posts from the East Coast shows and somebody was like, oh, you should check them out. They're really fun live. And I don't think I got the chance to see them live until, I want to say it was like March of 2006. I think they were doing CD USA. That was the first time I got to see them. Yeah. So I brought one of my friends and he was like, what are you listening to? This is not in your, in your genre right now. And I was just like, I don't know. Like, there's just something about it. So then I took him to that. He was like, okay, they're fine. Okay, I get it. And I think the next time I was able to see them was when they were opening up for Jump 5 at the Orange County Fair. I actually, I missed my sister's bachelorette party because I was like, hey, I have to go. And she's like, you've seen them twice already. And I was like, no, I got to go all three nights. It's fine. It's fine. And then that's when my family was just like, oh, here we go again. It's insane.
We lost her.
Yeah, exactly. They knew there was no turning back at that point. Because before that, I was into NSYNC and Hanson. Hanson was my first concert at the Hollywood Bowl way back in the day. And I remember my mom, back then you had to actually like go pick up your tickets and buy them in person. So my mom took me out of school early to go buy our tickets. And I remember all my friends were so jealous. They're like, my mom would never, we're too young for that. And my mom's like, no, I think this is going to be her thing. I think concerts are going to be her addiction in life. It's going to be her happy place. And then now she's like, well, yeah, I didn't expect it to be this bad. But yeah, no. And but now she's like, hey, so I've been helping you, you know, I've been supporting them alongside you for 17 years. She's like, when do I get to go to a concert? So I'm like, okay, mom, you can go next door.
Oh, she hasn't been to one.
Not yet. I brought my sisters. My boyfriend's been to a handful now, but my mom's never gotten the invite.
Oh, gosh.
That's how many exciting. Have you been to now, Shelby?
We don't talk about the numbers, okay?
No, give us.
No. Today we do. So that's my next question. Just rapid fire. In the same order. So Lisa, starting with you, how many shows do you think you've seen of the Jonas Brothers?
Bad thing is I've never kept track. Oh, that could be anywhere from like 20 to 100 something. I have no idea. I just would randomly be like, I should go tomorrow. I don't have a ticket. Let's figure it out.
Same as Lisa. I feel like in 2009 I counted and I was at 50. That was now how many years ago? So I definitely have to be 80 is my guesstimate. I keep saying I want to sit down and actually count out, but it's up there. But I don't want to make anyone feel bad again. This is 2005, so that's a lot of years in there for all these 80 shows.
Well, and you were there, like, you know, when there were more of us than there were of the fans.
Right. Yeah.
In those tiny Jersey clubs.
Exactly. Yeah.
That's funny. Stephanie.
Yes. So, I mean, before 2013, I had only seen them 23 times. And then when they broke up, I got refunded for the tickets. I was going to see them in Westbury that October. I was heartbroken. But then I got refunded that money and I started like a Jonas tour fund. And everybody thought I was stupid for doing that, but 6 years went by and I never stopped.
Wait. For clarity, you started the fund when they said we're done.
Yeah. In because hopes
that they would come back together.
In hopes, yeah. And I didn't know if it was gonna happen, but like it was just like a gut feeling. I was like, I don't really know what the future holds, but I feel like there has to be a way, like at some point, I just hope and I pray that it will end up being what they want to do, what they want to come back and do when it's right for them. And so I just had that hope and that faith. And I kept, anytime I had an extra, didn't matter how much it was, it's like $1, $5, $10, whatever I had, I would just add it if I had extra. And then 6 years went by. So when they announced their reunion in 2019, I was literally like, let's go. And I went to 27 shows just on the Happiness Begins tour. It was ridiculous. I like quit my job that I was miserable at and I just went nuts. but yeah, so the number today is 86. So it's a little bit, it's kind of increased a little bit.
Yeah, I'd say that accelerated. Carla, how about you?
Okay, so I lived way deep South Texas, like the little point, basically Mexico. And I was like 12 years old. So having to get my parents to take me was always like a whole ordeal. But they did take me to like one of each of their headlining shows. So before, or by the end of 2013, I had only gone to 5. And then they got back together. And then on the Happiness Begins tour, I did 4. But then on Remember This Tour, I did 18. And then you add the Secret Show. And then you add like all these other shows that just like started snowballing. So right now I'm at 40. But it's just crazy because at the end of 2019, I was at 9. So that's why I'm like, whoa, that happened like in almost 2 years, because in 2020, there was no shows. And then like this year just started. But like this year, I'm already going to be at 5. So like, and that doesn't include like performances like at Billboard or like at the Paul Simon thing, or my like events that I would go with them to, or like Nick Jonas or DNC. Like I haven't counted any of that. So just Jonas Brothers shows, like full shows, 40. But wow. Soon I will be up there, I fear.
I've never seen anybody 40 times. I've never seen anybody 5 times. Shelby, how about you?
Well, there's a lot. there's a lot. And I think being in LA I've seen him in Florida. I've seen him in New York. I've seen him in Arizona, New Mexico, Vegas, all the fun places. It's a lot. It's actual shows, actual concerts. It's well over 100. That's all I'll say on that one. Just since 2019, just since the comeback, I've also kind of not gone to as many as I had before, and I'm already at 30. So it's, yeah. It adds
I don't up. Know, Shelby. You said in the fan event surprise that you stopped counting at 300, and that I was did, in 2019.
I did, but you know.
Not to look too crazy. Wait. 300?
Yes, but that includes like there's been some days where I've seen him two or three times in one day because they didn't.
No, but you just brushed off 300 as if. As if there was something there to qualify. That's almost a year of shows if you did one a day.
Yeah, we would do multiple, my friends and I would do multiple, like we would just jump in each other's car and go to the next show for the tour. Like we would just keep adding on and adding on. I know there's been some fair shows back when they did the fairs, when they did all the fairs in California, we were literally driving 12 hours to the next one right behind the bus. Basically,
right.
There have been some times where like we would go and then Kevin would see us the next day. He's like, so how was your guys' drive? And we're like, yeah, it was all right.
Yeah, we didn't have a bunk. Yeah, in the bus, there's a bunk. You guys roaded the trip and got it done. So let me ask you, and you can just now just kind of freeform as it comes to mind. What's the craziest thing you think you've done as a Jonas Brothers fan, forgetting that I'm their father for a second, because I don't want you to think I'm going to creep this guy out. I actually am genuinely, I scared Willie Nelson once when I saw him. I kind of blacked out after I saw him, and then I kind of woke up running across the street screaming, Willie! And he was kind of moving really fast away from me, and I kind of stopped and went, oh my God, like I just did what I see Jonas fans do and other super fans do. I kind of like almost lost myself in my love of Willie Nelson and went, I was standing in the middle of traffic.
We've all had that blackout.
Yeah. So what's like the craziest moment for you when you tell the story and it might feel normal to you? And in this circle, but what's the craziest thing that when you tell people you did as a Jonas fan that they go, have you seen a therapist?
And then I answer, yes, I have actually.
Yes, me too. So tell me.
You know, because you said it's so normal to us, it's actually hard to look back and be like, okay, what is like the craziest thing? Because it's like, to me, I'm like, yeah, we slept outside in the cold rain overnight just to see them at the Star on Hollywood Boulevard in the when it was very dangerous and stuff. Or like we in Vegas literally last week when we stayed, we lined up at like 8 p.m. We were out there in the cold. Literally, the show didn't start until 8 p.m. the next day.
Yeah, but like, on to me, the like, Las Vegas Strip.
Yes. And to me, I'm like, that's not like a big deal. I'm like, I'll do it again. It's fine. So I don't know. So usually when I do tell people the stuff that I do, that's the one that they usually freak out about. Or when I explain that, like one time DNCE was doing a free show with JBL in Vegas, and I had just bought my car. And again, way down there in South Texas, it was like a 2-3 day drive. And I filled it up with me, my boyfriend at the time, two of my best friends, and like my best Jonas friend. And we just drove all the way to Vegas. None of us had ever gone there. But we just went to Vegas, did the show, like they did the show, and then we drove all the way back. Like that felt like 10 full days in one. It was crazy. So like, I feel like telling people like, oh, I've traveled to go do this, or during Remember This Tour, I would literally get on a flight, like go to LAX and go to whatever show, come back to the flight, like from to a different airport, fly back in, come home, change my suitcase, take the suitcase to work, go to work. And then at work, they would drop me off back at LAX, and then I would go somewhere else And like my therapist, anytime I was talking to him, was like, so where are you right now? Like, where are you at? Because I'm losing track. And I'd be like, honestly, I don't even know what day to tell what day it is. I just like am going off adrenaline. So the traveling aspect of it is, I think, what people, for me personally, like freak out about when I tell them that I did something to go somewhere or whatever.
My first ever flight actually was for the Jonas Brothers. And this was back in like 2007, I think. They were opening up for Justin McCartney in Boca Raton, Florida.
And I was there. I know that show very well.
I flew out by myself, first time ever. And I stayed with a girl that I didn't know, never met. Like I met her.
How old were you?
I don't know. How old was I in 2017 or 2007?
19?
Yeah, I was about 19. And so I'd only known this girl on the internet. And like in 2007, it was kind of a different place. Like everybody's very much on the internet now. Like you see their whole personality. So yeah, I flew out there. I stayed with her, went to the concert, and then came back like the next day. And everybody's like, you didn't even explore Florida. It was your first time there. And I was like, no, I had to get back. I had to go to work. It was just like, I had 2 days off for work and I just flew out to Florida to see him open up for somebody else and then come back.
Open up for somebody else. But I remember that show vividly because after they finished their set, that was as it was starting to go whoop. Mm-hmm. They finished their set and about a half to two thirds of the crowd were then standing backstage waiting for the guys to come out. And it was like, this is taking off. That's a very specific show where I was like, we're here opening for somebody else, but things just changed. Like it was a big deal. What about you, Stephanie?
I have a similar answer. I feel like it's been like a collection of ridiculous, crazy things that I've done. I feel like in 2010 was the first time people started like truly judging like what I was doing, because I camped out at a venue for the first time and I was by myself, and the only reason I camped out was because I had sound check and I wanted to be up close for sound check because you don't have like a specific seat for sound check.
So for those listening, the sound check parties,
the best
guys, you know, there were meet and greets, but the sound check parties, we literally almost put on like a funny show. The guys would dress up, they would do different things, they would call people up. I mean, it was an event to be at a Jonas Brothers sound check.
Absolutely. My friend and I actually made a costume because Joe had this like Muffin Man wrap, and we made a costume that was a giant muffin. We used like hula hoops and we crinkle cut like this cardboard, put it around. It was ridiculous. So like that was probably the first time that people started really like, what is wrong with you? and then 2013 was the first time I started like traveling by myself to see them. I was like getting on a Greyhound bus because I had to be at the opening night of their summer tour. Like I had to go. So it was just Chicago, but then I went to Ohio and then I went to San Diego, and then it started just kind of getting crazy. And then of course 2019 was when I went just off the handle. Like
full send,
exactly. I was making 14-hour drives by myself or taking a Greyhound bus. Like I would go to a show. I think in November 2019 was when it like was at its peak level of chaos, where I've quit my job. I was like, all right, I'm out of PTO and I hate this job so much. I've been here 3 years. I'm miserable. And I have never been more happy in my entire life than I have been feeling since this reunion, since going to these shows, meeting new friends, which like literally all of my friends have come from the Jonas Brothers and these shows and like everything. So I was just like, I'm done. I'm quitting my job. I am flying to Florida. I'm going to start at the Florida show and then I'm going to just keep going. And I got on a bus. So it was Orlando. And then the next night was Jacksonville. And then the next night was Atlanta. And then I went to Charlotte. And then I went to Newark, New Jersey, Brooklyn, Boston.
No, I saw you in the pit in London.
Yeah. I've never in my life been to Europe. Like I've, of course, Europe is an incredible like destination that most people like are like, oh, my dream vacation is going to Europe. And of course, I you know, it's beautiful and there's a lot of culture and stuff that I would love to see. But like, I've never been the type of person with plans to go to Europe ever. But the Happiness Begins tour ended and I was at 24 shows and I was like, I cannot accept that this is over. And I literally kept researching flights, and I was researching flights that were out of cities that I wasn't from, because I was like, if I have to drive to a different city to find a cheap flight to get to Europe, I will do it. So that's what I did. I got on a bus to Toronto, and then from Toronto, I flew to London, and I saw them in London twice because they had two nights. There was one at the O2, and then there was one at, the name is slipping my mind, but there was two in London, and then I got on another bus and went to Scotland. And then I only had like 4 or 5 days off of the new job that I had gotten. And when I was hired, I was like, listen, guys,
for those that are listening, that new job was at Nelly's Southern Kitchen, right?
Oh, not yet. Not yet.
Oh, because so, just for the sake of like connection,
yeah.
Stephanie is a bartender and she started in our Belmont location, then went to Las Vegas. And when our general manager in Belmont came and said, look, there's this girl, she's a super fan. And I'm not sure if we should hire like somebody who is a super fan. Plus she's saying that if the Jonas Brothers are in concert, she has to be off. And I said, we wouldn't exist without them. And he went, oh, I never thought of it that way. Okay, then we'll hire her. So it's been funny that I'll occasionally be out somewhere standing side stage and go, oh, see that girl right there on the front row pressed against the barricade? That's our bartender.
Pressed against the barricade.
Like losing my rib cage against the barricade, jumping and having
In random cities, it's like, oh, there's Stephanie.
Oh, she's here again.
Oh, so
I know. Yeah, sometimes we tell her, we're like, hey Steph, look, there's your boss, go say hi.
I see you in the distance and I'm always like, you're the best I've ever had in my life. I love you.
I'm stealth everywhere I go. I sneak in, sneak out. Kat, how about you?
Piggybacking off of what everyone else said, it was a time when in our lives when Lisa, we had a group of friends in the Northeast, we would just be like, hey, they're playing Boston, they're playing Hartford, they're playing New York City, Delaware, let's just drive, hop in our cars. Lisa, again, like similar to Shelby's story, we met online and we were just like, hey, wanna come up to see the boys? Cause she was in Louisiana, or she was in the South at the time, and there were fewer concerts there than in the Northeast. So we happily were like, hey, come on up. And again, no stranger danger at that time, or at least in this community, everyone felt very safe. And it was a connection that I've really never felt with another group of people in my life. We all just were looking out for each other and down for, you know, a road trip at any, you know, let's fly to Vegas and then drive to LA. And
you guys will remember this. Where was our first, the Jonas Brothers first sold out show? Because we announced it was 100 people and it was in the small room, not the big room.
My first thought was that club in New Jersey, but now I don't think that's correct.
I think it might be Connecticut. But anyway, wherever that was.
The space? Was it the space?
What's that?
Was it the space?
Can't remember. But when we arrived, there were girls camped out outside and they were laying like in sleeping bags. And there were 2 or 3 homeless guys in the middle of them. And I was like, girls. And we called them all over, like, get inside. What are you doing? This is insane. And they were like, we don't want to miss our spot. It's like, right. I've saved your spot. You are not. You're not laying on the street with these homeless guys. And I, you know, they were all young ladies. So we took them inside the venue and let them sleep wherever there was warm space available, but we couldn't always do that. But
It was the Webster Underground in Hartford.
That's it.
That's where it was. Yes.
Webster Underground, because which the Webster it, Hall yeah.
right.
it was the sell out. So it was mm-hmm. that 100 people that fit in the tiny club. That was the day. Lisa, how about you?
Well, I mean, Kat said some of it. She stuck with me. She's my roommate now. So yeah, I lived in Louisiana, and it was just like, they came to Texas 3 times, I think, maybe in the course. Well, like once with Ali and AJ before they really started to take off. And so there was nothing down there, as Carla knows. So I met all these people on MySpace and was like, I've never been on a plane. Let's go. So I flew up there. And then at some point I ended up quitting my job, moving to Pennsylvania, getting a weird job that I hated, that I was not qualified for, and ended up getting fired from that because I'd go to so many shows up north that I didn't want to drive back home, even though I would. I'd go to the show and then drive back at 3 a.m. to go to work at 8 in the morning. And I would just keep doing that. So eventually I got fired from that job.
Oh, wait, but, let me jump in there. So how many of you have either lost a job or had to quit a job because you've been a Jonas fan? Okay. How many of you have spent more than $1,000 on merch?
Probably. I haven't counted, but I'm more than sure.
Yeah. Like Steph, you're Stephanie, you're wearing a Jonas Brothers t-shirt, merchandise t-shirt.
This is correct. And I have three of these. I have two that are like this, and then I got one from the pawn shop. But then unfortunately, when we were running through the Park MGM to one of the residency shows, there was this little dog that someone was holding. And it, like, I don't know if, like, because we were running, if it got like scared or something, but it lunged almost out of the lady's arms and bit a hole in my shirt. So I was gonna wear that today because I thought it was like kind of in the back. I was gonna wear my like really good one that I got from the pawn shop, the Jonas Brothers pawn shop, not just like a pawn shop. And unfortunately the hole was like right in front, so I just had to wear this one. But I love it because it has that quote on the back, the live like you're at the bottom even if you're at the top. That's
OG, like, OG.
Yeah, that's
that was on everybody's MySpace like quote thingy. It was like a bio. That was in all of everybody's bios.
Yeah,
that's awesome. Okay, let me ask this. So, I assume you guys have favorite songs and all the rest. Like you mentioned, One Day at a Time. Mm-hmm. So, what is your favorite Jonas Brothers song?
What a terrible question.
Right. Oof. It's like choosing your favorite child.
I can't pick a favorite album. I mean, I always say Please Be Mine because that one was like the one that like I clung on to for like the longest time, literally would sob listening to it every single night. And then like, you know, thinking about how that's the one that started it all for the three of them. So I just like, that one holds like a very, very close like place in my heart. And but like right next to it is Black Keys. And yeah, I mean I got Nick to write it. It's in his handwriting. I have the lyrics right here. And yeah, that one just helped me get through a lot. Like when I was just like thinking, which happened often, when I would just be thinking like just really like dark negative thoughts before I even knew that like mental health and mental illness or anything like that was like a thing. And nope, like I would tell people about it, especially where I'm from. It's like the South and everybody's like Hispanic. And in our culture, that's not really a thing. So nobody like got me. And I did, like, I never knew what to do with these thoughts and feelings. So I would listen to that song. And like, when they're literally talking about like, don't let them get inside of your head, I would like pretend like they were singing it straight to me. And I'm like, okay, yes, of course I'm gonna listen to the Jonas Brothers, duh. So I won't let them get inside my head. So it's like that song helped me a lot. And I've been dying to hear it live. And speaking of crazy things, I'm going like the farthest mile to be there in 2 weeks for that night specifically. And if it's not played, I don't know what I'm going to do with myself.
I think they're playing down the records. I really, This is like insane. I heard that the verified fan was literally through the roof, the response. And all of those people could buy multiple tickets. So
we are not verified fans.
none of us. Maybe like I saw two people on the timeline that got one. And so everyone was freaking out. I know everybody was mad. But then the very next day, the timeline is full of people somehow found a way to get tickets. Like, but it's because people were helping each other out. Like, my friend texted me and was like, this girl, she asked me if I had your number because she got a code for Lines, Lines, and Trying Times. And she bought one already for a little bit longer. So she doesn't have money to buy another one. And she knows you really wanted to go because of Black Keys. So she literally sent her, like, without even going to me, sent to somebody else her login information because you can't transfer the codes and her password that has, like, all her information and everything. Just trusted me like that because she was like, no, I want Carla to have it. So all day I was on there like trying to find like friends that also wanted it. And then like, it was a whole thing. It was a whole process.
The second they announced it, I went, unbelievable. They're going to do, for those that are listening, after their Vegas residency, they threw up five shows with about, what, 2 weeks notice in New York? About
around that time, yeah.
3 weeks notice, playing all the songs and the hits from five records.
The crazy thing is, like, all of us literally, when we heard this was happening, we were like, they're doing it. They're doing the thing that we've been like begging for and praying for, like, all these years. We've like, it's like a dream come true. And so I think a lot of us immediately, we were just like, we don't even know like how we're gonna do it, but we started booking flights. Like, I have my flights booked, no tickets. I have my time off request approved. But like,
are all of you planning to be there? Is that realistic? You're all trying to get tickets to those shows?
My friend bought me tickets for the Lines, Lines, and Trying Times one. So now I just have to worry about getting a flight because people have offered for me to stay with them. So I don't have to worry about that. But then it's like, I know how I am. And I'm like, great, I'm going to be there. And I'm going to be like, well, since I'm already here, why not go to this night and this night? But like, who knows? I don't know. I will be there. Like, I can't miss. Like, I think that's like the urgency for a lot of us, that it's like, these are a lot of our favorite songs are not like the most popular ones that get played often. So it's like, okay, here, we're giving you this album and it's guaranteed that we're going through the whole thing. And if your favorite song or one that you've been dying to hear is on here, then you like, when are they going to do this again? I don't know. So it's just like,
for pom-poms.
Hey, Swifties. We've seen the tour, gone to the movies, grabbed Taylor's versions, and even watched a few football games. So what's next for Taylor Swift? Listen to Taylor Swift Today, the podcast that keeps you up to date with everything Taylor. From Fearless to Folklore and everything in between, if you can't get enough of Taylor Swift, make Taylor Swift Today a part of your podcast routine. Follow Taylor Swift Today wherever you get your podcasts.
I was listening to it earlier, what's up with that one? Why do they hate it so much?
Oh, they don't hate it. No, I think, you know, they're going from the explosion part of it. There are some wonderful moments on the Nicholas Jonas record. There are wonderful moments on It's About Time. Even, you know, there's stuff on the Disney Channel show. There are some amazing moments on, especially Jonas L.A.
L.A. is good.
That
really is. They want to come to L.A. and do a Jonas L.A. show.
It's
insane. So let me ask you mentioned like the tattoo, like, regardless of Jonas Brothers, how many have tattoos of lyrics? Two of you, because that request was overwhelming. Like, there was a season where Jonas fans were taking their special lyrics, and you mentioned Black Keys. Insane. Well, let me go to probably the moment of like any fan's heart. And that is, what was it like for you guys when they said, we're taking a break?
It was horrible.
And I was like, I don't know who wants to go first.
It was so bad. Like, and I think, I don't know, it was something that was so hard to process, because I definitely think that all of us here have the same type of love for them that goes, it's beyond surface level. We care about them as people. It's not just like, you know, oh, why are they doing this to us? Like, they're not puppets, like, to perform and like be miserable. Like, we want them to be happy genuinely. So like, it was so mixed, because I felt so terrible that like they had come to a point where they couldn't, you know, keep doing what we have seen them loving to do for so long. So it was really heartbreaking, and super devastating, of course, selfishly, because like we wanted to see them so badly on that fall tour, and like there's all this stuff that was supposed to be coming up, and we were so excited for it, and they were such a big part of our lives. Like, it was just gut-wrenching for me personally. That was the first time I actually got fired from a job, because it was not a serious job. I was working at a drive-thru, so like it wasn't anything serious, but I literally was at the drive-thru window with my stupid little headset on, and I like literally couldn't stop crying.
It was I got sent home from Olive Garden because I was literally in the back crying into the plates, and they were like, bro, okay, just go home, like you can't do this. And they like, people would be asking like, what's wrong with her, and they'd be like, the Jonas Brothers broke up, and they'd be like, oh no, she should not be here. I had people literally texting me my condolences. Like, it felt like somebody had died. Like, it was just not, oh my God, it was so. And then for me personally, that year outside of that was literally the worst year of my entire life. And then that happened, and I was like, I'm done. This is it. I can't do it anymore. Like, oh, I think it also made me, like how Steph said, really, really sad when they're like admitting that they weren't happy. And then I felt bad because I was like, oh my God, this whole time I'm over here begging for them not to break up. And like, wait, so does that mean on this last tour they weren't happy? Oh my God, like this, like I started like spiraling on how they were feeling and how much that sucked. And it was just like, I felt so helpless because I couldn't do anything there. Cause like how Steph said, it's like, we care about them as people and as human beings, and then they're brothers, and that's like family. So it was just like, and then for the whole world to see it, like it was just like all of the fans' emotions plus us like thinking about what their emotions like probably were, and that literally cracked. Like I physically felt my heart crack in half. Like, I don't know how else to explain it, but it was just like so sad.
Accurate for sure.
It was interesting how many people outside were like, hey, did you hear? Hey, how do you feel about this? I'm like, mind your business. Right. So what are you going to do now? And I was like, let me process.
I'm in grief. Yeah.
Literally.
I was in grief myself.
Yeah. And it's, I guess, a testament to the people that care so much about them truly and deeply, because it wasn't like, oh, they're breaking up, so whatever, like we're gonna go join another fandom or like, you know, move on or something. It was like, okay, so what's next? How can we support them in their separate journeys or whatever they're gonna you know, try next? Like, we're gonna support them in every other way, you know, when Nick did his solo stuff or Joe did DNCE, or even their side projects and all the stuff that Kevin was involved in, like all of his apps and like
all the apps that were routine and stuff. Yeah.
And yep. Then like building their families, like for real, when Kevin and Danny like announced that they were having their child, and like when Alina was born, that was after the breakup, and like he was like live tweeting Alina's birth, and we were all like on Twitter watching this happen, and like just still there, like nothing had changed. Like, obviously a lot had changed, but it wasn't going to change it for like those of us who truly, you know, we're going to stand by them through whatever season of life, through whatever they end up doing. Like, we're there. We will stay for real.
And having So in my experience, it was a very, a terrible year, but that year, Backstreet Boys also came back. So I was on that high because I went through that, you know, 7-8 years before that. And then the boys announced they were taking a break. And it was just, again, I was a preteen when Backstreet Boys broke up. It was sad. I cried. But this felt like Carla and Steph said, it was, I was worried about them as people. And because we saw them grow up, we were all a family. And, you know, I was very blessed to have been there for a very long time. And it was honestly more heartbreaking than Backstreet Boys breaking up or taking a break, NSYNC taking a break, because they are family. We are all a family. And it was very emotional. And I just remember all of us, it was interesting because we all could process it on social media together. So I'm very thankful for that, versus when we were younger, we just had TRL or we had these very siphoned ways of connecting with other fans. This was, we were all together going through these stages of grief and kind of processing it all together. So I am very thankful for social media in that era of life, because I think that really kept me in check. And just, I get, being on the elder side of the fan base, I worried about the younger fans, because again, I'd gone through it. I know, you know, there were two outcomes. NSYNC never got back, Backstreet did. So I didn't know where this path was going to take them. So, and as a, you know, 17, 18, 16 year old, it's hard to process those feelings when that is your life. So it was very eye-opening and a rough time. But again, social media was a huge help in that era of the breakup or the
think break, about that say. Statement. Social media was a help during that part.
I know.
That's pretty amazing given how destructive normally social media can be. Mm-hmm. Lisa, how about you?
I mean, similar to Kat, it was obviously felt it more on a personal level than I did when, like, I was an NSYNC fan. Kat doesn't like that, but, you know, it was a little different than when they broke up just because of the personal relationship that I had with them and with you and everything. But at that time, I worked for a very popular YouTube channel that did YouTube news. So it was kind of like, you know, everybody in the office came up to me and they were like, hey, hope you're doing okay, but also can we get this story out right away? You know, so ouch, it was like a different process that I had to do that was like, okay, here we go. Let's go upload this video about the breakup and everything. So coming from a journalistic point of view, it was a pretty busy day that day.
it was a pretty busy season. Of course, for me, I've talked about it. The only hat that mattered that I wear that was the dad hat during that time. I completely forgot about everything other than these are my kids and they're hurting. So I've noticed something through this. So how many of you have lives that are somehow related to your drive as I'll call it a super fan, like your occupations after you landed through the part-time jobs and that part, how many of you ended up or have ended up spending time doing things that were a part of your fandom experience?
Yeah.
All of them. Isn't that interesting? Same with me. I was the kid that would sit around and watch every award show and write all the information down and think through and cross-reference. And we didn't have the internet in my day. And I was an early adopter of the internet. But back in my day, you had to take notes and you had to listen to their speeches and you had to look at the J cards and the album liner notes. And I kept all that info. I was passionate about it for later on in my life when it would matter. My wife said to me early in our marriage, someday you're going to be able to use all of this useless knowledge.
I use this.
and look what I do today. And even this podcast is kind of a reflection of, you know, I know a lot about a lot of pop music trivia through the decades, and it matters. So the boys broke up. You guys were on this hiatus with them. Tell me what it felt like when out of nowhere, the rumbling started. By the way, how it did not leak, I still don't really know because they had finished a full record. You guys know that now. But the rumbling started about a week before and started really building about 3 days before that, wait, it's coming. And then pow, and it was Sucker. And it included everything, the family, the visual, their men, the song was a monster. How did that feel?
Well, me, Lisa, and Shelby were literally told. Yeah, it was like the three of us were literally like, oh, hey, here, you've spent 4 hours crying about your stories with the Jonas Brothers. How would you feel if they came back? And we were like, oh, my God, I can't answer this question. And then all of a sudden,
the most magical orchestra starts playing when you look me in the eyes.
It totally felt like we were in the sky, like heaven. It was so slow motion for me. I was like,
wait. So you were at the promo piece where the video, the curtains opened up and it was the Jonas Brothers announcing. Mm-hmm.
And it was before they actually announced, so we couldn't tell anybody. And it was like, oh my God, what am I supposed to do? So when it actually came out and people were checking on me, I had to act like I didn't know. And I was like, oh my God, wow. I had no idea this was happening. But yeah, so for, I mean, I don't know if you guys knew before, but I knew people were like already speculating because they had seen them filming in Australia. And I was like, guys, it's probably just about their family because I didn't want to get my hopes up. And I'm like, you guys are crazy. They never get back together. They would never do that. Nick wouldn't do that. Da, 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 da. So then even when they flew us out there and they were like, this is for a documentary, I was like, okay, it's probably just about their lives because we're the fans, whatever. They're not going to pop out. If they do, they're just going to come and say hi. Thanks for doing this and bye. That is not what happened.
Oh, and the fact that they used When You Look Me in the Eyes, which I wrote with them, that song started playing. And I saw the piece before it went live. It took me 24 hours to stop crying.
When we were like leaving, I think I had crying spells for 2 weeks. Like it was just like full the whole time. And then people would be looking at me, and before it happened, they would be asking me what's wrong, and I'm like, nothing. I'm just going through a hard time. Like, I didn't want to say what it was, but it was like, I don't know. Still to this day, I don't think I can process that part, like when it all first happened, because it felt very like surreal and crazy. And the fact like that, how you said they included everyone and their fans, and like at their Sophie and Priyanka were there, and the guys took their time to be like, hey, look, this is my wife. And then we like danced with them, and it just felt very like, I don't know, like more. It just is a crazy personal journey. And like, for me specifically, like I didn't grow up with all of the experiences. So it was just like some weird form of healing my inner child I don't know. And it was almost also not that that's why I did it, but it's like my parents, for example, my father, to be more specific, like, what are these guys ever going to do for you? Da, 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 da. Like, you need to chill, whatnot. And it was like, ha ha, look at what has happened now, sir. Look at what has happened now. And he told me in Spanish, but he was like, yeah, I eat my words. They are they are those men, and we have to stand. And I'm like, that's what I thought.
That's awesome.
It's huge.
How about the rest of you? How did you feel?
It was crazy. I mean, before that video that we filmed, I work sort of in the industry, so I have friends at labels and whatever. So I had actually heard rumblings and rumors and things. And I mean, you know, Ms. Jonas, that I don't say anything. Right. I'm very good at, you know, not releasing anything that I know, for the past 20 years. So I just, I think I told Kat maybe. It was like an overwhelming feeling that was like, is this actually happening? It kind of felt like a daydream. And then actually sitting there and seeing it all happen, like I have to go back and watch that video sometimes because, I'm kind of the quiet super fan. I'm not the one that's like always tweeting, and I have to be somewhat professional for my job and whatever. So it was just like me in my room just rewatching that video being like, oh, this actually did happen. Like this is kind of wild because, it's a full circle moment with, I've had my ups and downs with them and this career and everything. So it just felt like a homecoming.
Mm-hmm. Anybody else?
I remember the rumbling starting like a while before because I think their Instagram got reactivated or something. Yeah. And everybody was like, wait, what? How? What's going on? And then It wasn't, I don't feel like it was too long after that, that all of a sudden, like, we started hearing about them filming things or like being together, which they hadn't been together or at least been seen together in a while. So that's when everybody started talking. I was like, nah. So then when I got the call and they like were very vague about what it was, and I was like, oh, this is a call from Philly Mac. Like, I'm going. There's only one, one band this could be about. All right. I was like, I don't know what it is, but I'll be there tomorrow.
Right. Yeah, literally. It was the night before. Cynthia Parker had messaged me and she's like, hey, are you free? And I was like, yes. And she's like, okay, keep your phone on you. And I was like, okay. And then she sent me eye emojis. And then right after that, John Taylor followed me. And I was like, what is happening? And then right after that, Garbo called me. And like, that took me to like my childhood, that I was like, wait, hold on. Because these guys were also a part of the band. And I was like, oh my God, there's Garbo, and there's Jack, and there's JT. So I'm like, why is this man calling me? What's happening? And he was like, can you get on a flight tomorrow? And like, they are literally my number one. So it was literally like, yes, no questions asked. I'm doing it. Did I sleep? No. But I was like, I am going to be there, of course. And then, yeah, but then all of that happened. And that happened actually down the street. And now I live here. So that's even like, life, I can't make this stuff up. And literally, that's why it's crazy, because a lot of it comes from them. Like, none of that would have happened if it wasn't for them. Like, I don't know.
Right. Well, how, let me ask you guys another question, and I know we're going to run out of time here in just a second, but let me ask you this question. To the people that told you it's just a fad, it's going to pass, they don't care, what would you say, without being disrespectful to them, because they didn't see what you saw? You're going on how many, you know, it's soon going to be 20 years. What would you say?
I think it's kind of hard to like put it into words. It's almost a thing where it's like, just look at my life. Like, look at all these years and all the stuff that's come from this. Like, you can't dispute that it is something so good and so genuine and special that wouldn't, you know, I genuinely would not be here if it wasn't for this, for them. Like, you can't really hate on that, you know? Like, if you really look at the full picture of everything and the profound impact and all of the positive things that have come from this, and all of the darkness that, you know, a lot of us have dealt with and that we've been brought out of, like, I don't know, it speaks for itself. Like,
yeah,
it's not something that is just a fad or a phase or something that's, you know, surface level, or it is so something so deep and so profound, and something that is, you know, it has changed and saved lives, literally. So you can't, how do you hate on that, you know?
Everybody should be passionate about something, because that's what drives you to learn things. I've met so many people. I myself learned how to code websites and do graphic design and video editing and all kinds of things just because I had a passion for TV and music and movies. And, you know, that's not what my family wanted me to go do, obviously. But because of that, I now, you know, when I first started interviewing people, even the boys, I was too scared. I would give the questions to Kat or somebody else to say, here's my questions that I produced and wrote, but can you ask them? And then by the time I ended up working for them later on and whatever, I had built so much confidence just from, you know, being around them and them being so great to talk to, and other people that I now do on camera stuff. You know, if you had asked people 20 years ago, they'd be like, what are you talking about? Like, so like, just passion drives people to learn different things, whether you think it's good or not for what they're, you know, healthy, what they're doing. You know, it drives a passion and it drives them to learn. And I think you can't knock that.
Being a fan was one of the best things to happen in my life. So many opportunities have come from it. So many memories that I treasure to this day. And I just remember getting made fun of, it was not cool to be a fangirl. And now I'm just so proud of fans around the world, different generations, really taking claim and saying, yes, I'm a fan. And what is it to you? And granted, back when people were making fun of the Jonas Brothers and, you know, they thought they were just a blip on the radar, I don't think I had, maybe deep down, I want to say that I knew that they were going to not just be a flash in the pan. It was going to be, they were going to be one of the most iconic pop or just bands of our generation. So I like to say that success speaks louder than those insults. And I guarantee that some of those people that were making fun of them back in, you know, early 2000s are at the shows today screaming. And, you know, that yep. is the best feeling in the world when I walk around concerts and I see boyfriends and husbands and people that definitely were not fans in, you know, 2010s at the concerts now having the time of their life. That makes me so happy because music is something that connects people. And again, I am so grateful for it. I'm so grateful for being a fan because it has brought me so many, it's brought me to where I am today. And it's brought me so much happiness and so many memories. So success is the best revenge, I have to tell myself. Yeah.
If anybody ever judges me for going to so many of their shows, I'm like, just come with me. You'll get it. You'll get it. And then now, like, I can't do a Vegas residency without my boyfriend because he wants to go. He buys his own ticket even. I don't even have to buy his ticket, you know? He's like, no. And right. And now, you know, I've kind of corrupted him and he has to be in the pit. He's just like, no, I got to be in the crowd. You get a different experience when you're around people who are there for the same reason, you know?
It's wonderful.
I think I just like, from growing up, because I know a lot of people in the fandom had like have really bad experiences with like being bullied about being like a fangirl growing up. I don't know if it was because the good Lord was like, you know what, she's going through too much, let's not add that, or it's because I really was super firm from the beginning. Like, you could not tell me anything. That was the one thing that I was like 100% confident in, that I was like, hi, you're funny. Okay, yeah, tell me something about the Jonas Brothers. But then we'd go hang out and the guys would pull out their guitar and they're like, hey, I actually know this song, Love Bug. It's really good. It's cute. And I'm like, you see, like, I don't even believe, you don't even know what you're saying. Like, you're lying type of thing. And so for me, I always knew if I just showed it to them, nobody would ever leave being like, oh, I didn't like that. Oh, I want to see more. Oh, a bunch of like my guy friends that are like in an emo band industry down there from where I'm from would sit down and watch the documentaries with me, the live videos with me, and then they would like it and stuff. So I just was like how Kat said, like super confident and like, nah, like I know where this is going. I know who they are and you can't make fun of me because I'm not going to change. That was the one thing that I really, really did not allow people to like make fun of me for. And I think because of that, like it wasn't getting through to me that they kind of just had to accept it. But as I've gotten older, like I just kind of cope with humor. So when people are like, those guys don't care about their fans, they don't care about you or this and that, and I'm like, Nick Jonas gave me $100,000 and that's why I live in LA. Shut up. Like, you don't know what you're talking about. Like, what other like fandom, like what, like they care so much about their fans. Like I several times already, like I don't parade, like post about this stuff or whatever because it's like personal, but like Nick, for example, will see if I'm tweeting like that I'm going through a hard time and stuff. He has like his team reached out to me, and that's happened like a couple of times. Like, and it's like right after he gets off of stage, like from a show. Like people in general, there's not a lot of people, human beings, that have that kind of goodness in their heart. And the fact that they're just these big celebrities and they still have like hearts like that, and they like pour it back into their fans. Like, you can't, like whatever people say, it doesn't matter because it's not true, like type of thing. Then and then when you tell them all these things, they get really invested and they're like, wow, oh my god, that's so cool, and they want to know more. And then you take them to the shows and they were like, that was the best show, we need to do that again. And I was like, I told you. So it's just, I don't know, for me personally, I was always super super confident. Nobody was ever going to tell me anything, and if they really wanted to fight about it, I would just prove them wrong. Like, that's how I would deal with it. But it's just great now with social media, everybody sees everything, and people will be in my DMs that I grew up with and they're like, bro, this is so crazy. Like, I watched you in high school, in middle school, like write your countdown numbers of when you were going to see them and like create all of these edits, and like your birthday cakes were all Jonas themed, and like now look at where you are because of all of my experiences with them. So it's just like, I don't know, I'm super super grateful for them and everything they've done for me personally. Like Steph said, I truly would not be here without them, for sure. Like I wouldn't be the person I am, but outside of that, I really would not be here without them. Like I tell them all the time, I'm like, yeah, you guys saved my life several times. So I don't know. For me, that beats anything, whatever anybody tells me. It's gonna, boop, you're lying, you're wrong, bye.
Well, this has been wonderful. I'm gonna end with one question. Years ago, the boys were traveling. They were over in Asia, and they said they were at some sort of karaoke bar, and they get an urgent, capital letters, urgent email from me. Oh, and it said, urgent, what's your favorite Subway sandwich? And what, it has become a joke for them because they had been drinking and they were having fun. And their test for whether or not they're sober is whether or not they can say their favorite Subway sandwich. But I was sitting in the lobby of Subway about to go in for a pitch. And one of the things that we heard was it has to be authentic. Well, I knew my boys loved Subway, but I didn't know their favorite sandwich. So we're going to make it a part of the show to ask everybody that's on the show as a guest, urgent, what's your favorite Subway sandwich?
Oh, no.
So same order. Lisa, how about you?
That's funny because back then I think I used to ask questions that was like, if you were a sandwich, what sandwich would you be? That used to be one of my go-to questions. I'm an Italian BMT person on the cheese bread.
That's close to Nick there. Yeah.
Classic turkey provolone with the veggies. Yeah.
That's me.
And wheat bread. Yeah.
And wheat bread. Steph.
Forever ago, back in the day, I used to love Italian BMTs, but I changed my diet a little bit. I like the rotisserie chicken sandwich. Get a little banana peppers, lettuce, tomato. Good stuff. Very, very cool.
Carla.
They got rid of mine, RIP. So I've been getting the same sandwich because there was a Subway across my middle school. So we would always just like walk and get it. I've been getting the same sandwich for years. And they recently just got rid of it because it was the chicken breast one. So now I just get the rotisserie chicken and switch that out. But it was always either wheat bread or the one with the Italian herbs and cheese, toasted, the chicken, spinach, tomato, a lot of banana peppers, and chipotle sauce. That's the one I'm getting all the time.
I'm also an Italian BMT team. Awesome. Back in the day, I would get the meatball sub one, but just doesn't taste the same anymore.
Yeah, I would do the Philly cheesesteak, that one. But there was a long period of my life that I would do the just straight veggie.
Yeah.
All the vegetables. And that was good. Well, ladies, I can't thank you enough. Being on the podcast, it's an honor to have you. But more importantly, there was a study once just analyzing how much the average Jonas fan was spending in a year. And it was a number that I was like, how can they afford that? And then I ran into folks like you that so dedicated, and we weren't in a position to buy people's tickets and, you know, do things for free. I mean, if it weren't for merch sales, we didn't have gas money home for a lot of those shows. And without you, I say this sincerely, the Jonas Brothers wouldn't exist. The Jonas family wouldn't be where we are today. You're the heroes, and I love you, like genuinely a daddy's love. I love you. I appreciate you. Thank you so much for all your sacrifice, and thank you for being on our podcast.
Thank you.
Thank you, thank you so much.
Not me about to cry.
No.
I cry for everything. I'm a really emotional person, so it's just me, like, too. My heart.
Well, for those listening, thank you again for being a part of Legendary, the podcast. Please do follow. Please do share. please do make sure you share it with other people and let them know about it and tell people about these wonderful people here that were here today with us. Girls, ladies, love you.